Good evening. At this time, Mel, K2KEY, and Dick, K2RIW, try to run a thing called the TechNet. The technical net major purpose is a meeting of the clan where we help each other with ham radio subjects. Antennas and transmitters and feed lines and propagation and 26 different kinds of ham radio. We teach each other how to do it, how to do it better, how to have more fun with it, how to understand it. That's the general purpose of the TechNet. And the primary method by which you communicate with the TechNet is verbally. Sign in with a question. Get a friend to help you sign in with a question. But the live meeting of the clan is where the majority of the good work takes place, because Mel and Dick don't know everything. There's a whole lot of other people that gather that help out with their particular knowledge. And I'm mentioning all this to try to de-emphasize the written questions. The write-in questions are speaking to one particular person, Mel, K2KEY, who has volunteered to do that. And we've got to try to limit that somewhat. It's gotten a little bit out of hand in the past week. It's not fair for one person to be burdened with all that. So a person who writes in is accepting the responsibility that there is a high probability his question might not get answered. Whereas you sign in with a reasonable question on a subject of interest to radio amateurs, and 99.9% of the time your question will be answered somewhat immediately at the beginning of the TechNet. A person signs into the TechNet by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and a yes or a no. The yes means you do have a question or a comment for the net. Please check in right now. Give me your call letters and name. K2RIW listening.
KC2MDD, Steve, and yes. N2RSO, Frank, no.
So far we got Steve with a yes and Frank with a no. Anyone else?
KC2KKX, no.
Sending all K2KEY.
Mel recognized. Mr. KKX, although you had a no, please tell us your name, sir.
Name is Peter.
Okay, nice hearing from you, Peter. And let's hope we do eventually say something that you want to make a comment or a question on. So far, we've got Mel, Steve, Frank, and Peter. Anyone else to check in? Please give me your call letters and name at this time.
How was?
Yes.
Okay, so we got Howard and Glenn, both with yeses. Anyone else?
K2L2Y, no question, it's my turn.
And LTY, I think your name is Rich, have I got that right?
You are 100% correct.
I have a few that I remember. And as I remember, you're an expert on oil, among other things. Howard, did I get you correct that you do have a question of Mr. OJO?
Yes, that's affirmative.
Very good. Anyone else? One last call. Okay, Steve, KC2 Mike Delta Papa, you're number one on the runway. Go right ahead, K2RIW, listening. My name is Dick.
Good evening, Dick. Good evening, Mel. Dick, this question is not really ham radio related. It's in relation to low voltage transformers, if that's cool with you. Thank you.
Remember now that, Steve, the questions that are allowed on the TechNet is any subject of interest to ham radio operators. That even includes whether or not your XYL should be a blonde or a brunette. You got it, Steve.
Okay, Dick, thanks a lot. I ran into a problem with two low voltage transformers. One is electronic transformer, one is magnetic. I'll give you the details on it. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to hook up a series of lights transformers at 12 volts, I should say AC, not DC. Like I said, one is magnetic, you know, 120 volts in, 60 cycles, 12 volts out. The other transformer is an electronic type transformer. Same thing, 120 volts in, 12 volts out, but it's like 25 cycles. Now, the problem I'm having is when I put this electronic transformer up, the lights are really dim. And as soon as I use the magnetic transformer, the lights are full bright, so I'm getting the full transformer, you know, the full 12 volts. And the thing I found out that when I use my tester on the electronic transformer with 25 cycles, I get no reading at all. And I would imagine, you know, being as a digital transformer, it's probably only good for 50 cycles. You know, 50 cycles. You know, your comments on it, see if I'm correct in my thinking. Back to you, Dick.
Interesting. The electronic transformer, let's go back. The magnetic transformer, 120 volts in, 60 cycles, 12 volts out. You're happy with that. I presume your tester will tell you it's got 12 volts when you're using your tester on the AC scale, not the DC scale. I think you said that runs your equipment correctly, runs your lights correctly, and makes your tester behave correctly. Now, the electronic transformer, which sounds like a kind of power supply plus inverter, and I guess if you had an oscilloscope, it would be a lot of fun to look at what the output waveform looks like. 25 hertz is what you said, and maybe that 25 hertz electronic transformer is intended for an extremely light load of some kind, a piece of electronics, as opposed to the load of your particular light. So what current output do you think it's rated for? It might also be AC coupled. In other words, there may be a capacitor in its output, which would have a small capacitive reactance for a light load. But that capacitor would give you a great big voltage drop when you go into something as heavy as the light circuit loading. So two or three questions there. Was your tester in the AC mode? What is the intended purpose of the AC transformer? And do you believe you might be overloading it? You got it, Steve. KC2MPP, K2RIW.
Very good, Dick. Yeah, you did bring up an interesting point. I used these electronic transformers before, you know, I'm in the business. I found out with these electronic transformers that they are rated, you know, different volt amperes, and if the load is too light, the lights will not light, and of course, if the load is too heavy, you can end up running a transformer. In this particular instance, I think it's 250 VA transformer. I think I have like around 140 VA load on this transformer. And like I said, it's like forever to try and troubleshoot this. I couldn't even get my tester to, reach zero on this as far as the digital tester goes. So if I hooked up magnetic, which I just happened to have, everything was fine. I'm actually good.
Tell me about your tester. Is your tester a kind of voltmeter? Is it a DC voltmeter, an AC voltmeter? Is it an ammeter that you put in series? And also, when you did connect the tester, were you connecting the load simultaneously? There are certain kinds of transformer or electronic circuit supply things that only give you the correct output when they are loaded, and unloaded, you'll get what looks like nothing. So what's the nature of your tester, and what scale was it on? Steve, you got it?
Okay, Dick, yeah, it's a fluke. It's a digital tester, you know. It does AC, DC, it does amperage, it's an old meter. You know, it's a typical $100-some-odd-dollar fluke meter, you know, nothing fabulous. And, yes, I did test it with a load. I tested it without a load. And just as another test, I took a taillight bulb out of the truck and connected it directly to the transformer, and the bulb seemed to light, you know, full brilliance. And as soon as I went through this, run a cable out of these outdoor lights, the lights were totally dim on this electronic transformer next to you.
Okay, so the taillight from an automobile connected directly to the transformer gives you proper brilliance. But when that same taillight is put on a long piece of wire, you get very low brilliance. And what I think you're reconfirming is the whole reason why LiPo, LoCo, Con Ed, what's the difference between their transmission system and distribution system versus the voltage that we use in the house. Your and my house runs on something like 115, 230 volts. However,
the power that is used for distribution going down the block is either 2,300, 7,800, one of those kinds of voltages. And many people ask, you know, why did they use high voltage? And the answer is that the same amount of resistance of the wire gives you a much lower voltage drop when you're running lower current, higher voltage, same number of watts, same number of volt amperes. So if you have a fixed resistance in your wiring, the higher the voltage that you can make the whole circuit work at, the more efficient it will be. And by the way, the improvement goes up square law. Double the voltage, you get four times better efficiency, simply because you've got half the current, which gives you half the voltage drop. With half the voltage drop on a higher voltage expected, is a smaller percentage. You come out doubly beneficial. So you know that automobiles used to have 6-volt wiring, and now they've got 12-volt wiring because you need a lot less copper. And people have time to time talked about either 28 or higher voltages in an automobile. That's going to be a hard one to make it fly. So the resistance of your wiring going out to the yard could be the reason why you didn't get as much brilliance. Back to you, Steve. KC2MVP, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, Dick, that, as a matter of fact, that was one of my first thoughts on this thing, that I said, you know, I got, you know, let's say maybe 70, 80 foot long of number 12 gauge wire, you know, stuff specially designed for low voltage stuff. But then I said to myself, well, why does this 50 cycle transformer, which is supposedly putting out 12 volts, and I know these transformers, without a load, they'll put out maybe 14 volts top. The electronic transformer is also rated 12 volts. And, you know, like I said, I had no way of testing. My meter would read on it. But I figured it's got to be around there. And the only thing I could figure is, you know, I'm thinking like radio frequency, you know, that maybe it has something to do with the cycles, you know, 25 cycles versus 60, that light is so dim. You know, I said to myself, you know, voltage drop, well, if there's a voltage drop on the wire, I should have it on both transformers. Is this true, Dick? Back to you.
If it was really the same voltage and really a similar frequency, 50 hertz versus 60 hertz, the wire doesn't know the difference of that. And you keep saying that your tester shows no output, and that's a tough one. If it's a digital voltmeter of some kind, and digital voltmeters in the AC scale usually go down to at least 10 hertz and up to something like 10 kilohertz before they start reading in funny ways. You certainly have a bit of a mystery there. Too bad you don't have an oscilloscope. Do you have any other kind of meter in the house? A volt ohm milliamp meter, an old-fashioned triplet or a Simpson volt ohm milliamp meter, as opposed to the digital one, which sometimes can give some funny readings. There's also the possibility that your AC transformer that you think is 50 hertz, could it be 50 kilohertz? The electronic ballast transformers that they use for fluorescent lighting run at something like 50 kilohertz. And the reason they go that high is that it requires a lot less iron, and also the higher frequency gives you a lot less flicker. You take a 60-cycle type fluorescent light, wave your hand in front of it, and you'll see a stroboscopic effect. There's really a flicker going on. So you go to an electronic ballast fluorescent light, and you won't see that flicker because the frequency is so much higher. Is there any possibility your electronic one is running at the 50 kilohertz instead of 50 hertz? I'm back to you, Steve. And what is the intended purpose for the electronic transformer? KC2 MDP, K2RIW.
Okay, Dick, very good. No, it does write on it. I think it says 25 hertz on this electronic transformer. Basically, it's designed to run low voltage lighting, you know, like on the counter lights, or, you know, any type of low voltage lighting. And you did bring up an interesting point. I do have a couple of old Simpson 260 meters here, you know, in the house. I don't take them to work for fear of breaking them, you know. They're not very rugged. And that is a good idea. And I was just thinking, is there any way maybe this electronic transformer is, the volt, you know, is sensing the voltage drop, let's say, and it's cut back on power, you know, cut back on voltage. Is that possible? Back to you.
Once again, just to be double sure, your digital voltmeter, you're using it in the AC scale and reading voltage. Is that true, Steve?
On the magnetic transformer, yes. AC is scale on the magnetic, I get, you know, around 12 volts, you know, 12, 12 and a half volts with the load on it. The electronic transformer, like I said, with a load or without a load, I get no reading at all. Back to you.
Okay. When you do load it down with a tail light bulb and you see brilliance on the bulb and you put your digital voltmeter across that bulb while it is lit, you still see 0.0 volts. Is that what you're trying to say? Over to you, Steve.
That is correct, Dick.
You realize it's impossible. That light bulb ain't going to light until it sees voltage. The light bulb doesn't give a darn whether it sees AC voltage or DC voltage. If you tried your digital voltmeter in both the AC scale and the DC scale, and it measured 0.0 volts while the bulb is lit, you know that's impossible. Now, there is one other funny thing that's been going on here. Many electronic circuits that are acting like an inverter don't give you a sine wave, they give you a square wave. And a square wave with a steep sides on it and, you know, fast rise and fast fall time will make certain kinds of electronics behave a little bit differently. On top of that, there's a significant difference between the RMS voltage, in other words, the heating value when it goes into a resistor. The RMS might be the same, but the peak voltage on certain kinds of electronics wouldn't respond to it. For instance, if you had a very inexpensive inverter that's part of a UPS, uninterruptible power supply, in the early days, they used to put out a square wave of 120 volts. And 120 volts into a 120 watt light bulb, 120 volt light bulb, would give you normal brilliance. Plug it into a television set, and you'll get a very narrow picture, because the television set is looking for the 120 volt sine wave, which hits a peak of 167 volts. And therefore, its peak rectifying circuit, capacitor filter network, gets 167 volts instead of 120 volts. And so that set is looking for 167 volts on its DC power supply. You give it 120, and you get a narrow picture and some peculiar response. So I wonder if this rings any bells. Wait for a second for the beep, Steve. You got it, Steve, K2LIW.
K2KY, I'm going to comment on it.
Yeah, stand by a second, Steve. Bell, straighten this out. What in the world's going on here?
Hey, this is K2KEY. I have seen a couple of inverter type of power supplies that, you know, either for 12 volt AC or DC. In fact, I had one that had both outputs, either 12 volt AC and 12 volt DC. But I have never seen one at 25 hertz. Did he say 25 hertz? Both of them are very high frequency because of the small size. In fact, they've gone up now to approximately 300 kilohertz in a number of them, you know, to even further make the transformer in there smaller. But the ones, the switching type small power supplies that I've seen of that type, all are running at very high frequencies, anywhere 25 kilohertz. Whoa! And in fact, for many of them there, I can say many of them are running much higher frequency signals. Maybe it's marked wrong, over.
Hey, you may be onto something here. It sure would be nice to look at this on an oscilloscope. You realize it's one hell of a mystery there, Steve, where you're looking at the light bulb lit, and your voltmeter says nothing is there on the AC and DC scale. If you could really do that, boy, you could make some great parlor tricks and make a lot of money on this one. I'm beginning to think the volts read a little bit differently in Baldwin, Steve, than they do in Huntington or Brooklyn. I'm having some fun with you. You've got to look at that on the oscilloscope. You've got to try it with your Trimplet and your Simpson. 0.0 volts. Indicated into a 12-volt light bulb that's lit. You can't do that, but you've got a real good mystery here, and you got us on the edge of our seat. KC2MDP, K2LAW in the TechNet.
Yeah, Dick, it had me going, too. I've been in this business for 20-something years, and this is just the first time I've seen it. Now, the funny thing is, which is probably the most obvious that you mentioned several times, I've never tried it on DC voltage. I just assumed this thing said, you know, 12 volts output, 12 volts AC. It's, I'm pretty sure it was 25 hertz, and I'm saying to myself, oh, gee, you know, remember, you know, the technet and everything, that, you know, frequency can play funny tricks. And, yeah, I mean, with digital meter, the only thing I can see is maybe digital meter, you know, it's one of the auto-raging meters, and for some reason, you know, with basically set for 56. I definitely will try the sensor meter. I will bring this transformer home, and I will pull it apart before I send it back to the White House. Back to you, Dick.
Yeah, as you test it with a Simpson, a triplet, an oscilloscope, AC scale, DC scale, even on the digital voltmeter, there's a number of combinations for you to try. For you to watch the display on a meter read 0.0 volts, you're connecting it across the lead of a light bulb, and the light bulb is lit. Wow. When you find out what this is, it's going to be something kind of crazy. Please come back and let us know about it, Steve. And too bad you can't do it tonight. And you know, run out there tonight, go get it, and bring it back during the TechNet. We got to hear about this one, Steve. Alrighty, the next person who signed in, let's see, we had Frank, we had Peter. Looks like it's Howard next. KC2, Oscar, Juliet, Oscar. You got it, Howard. K2RAW in the TechNet.
I think two things. First of all, I have a comment.
I had my transmitter set in the wrong mode. I was listening to you on the input. Howard lives in Greenlawn. I wanted to hear what his signal sounds like on the input. I left my receiver in the wrong mode. Greenlawn has got some hilly areas, Howard, which could be aggravating the situation. Do you believe you live on so-called highland or somewhat down in the valley in Greenlawn? That could be an aggravating factor. A quick break on that one, Howard. Go ahead and wait for the beep.
I believe I'm...
Stopped very abruptly, Howard. Was that intentional?
Yes. The last word, K2RIW, K2QOJO.
Yeah, an aggravating factor here, Howard, is that you probably have done with your rooftop antenna the majority of your reception on channels 2 to 13. Channel 2 is 54 to 60 megacycles. Channel 13 is somewhere around 215 megacycles of VHF frequencies. The majority of the digital television channels are on UHF frequencies, higher than 470 up to something like 650 or 700 megacycles. When it comes to foliage attenuation, particularly in the summertime, which is where we are right now, particularly on a rainy day when there's water on those leaves, UHF frequencies get sucked up by those leaves and turned into heat, and so the insertion loss between you and the transmitting station becomes much, much higher.
So, additional factor, Dick.
And the additional factor is?
Yeah, they've been working on the antenna and they've messed it up royally. I have even problems. They actually replaced the antennas in the past 2 weeks, and it's got a lot of scalloping at the moment.
That was Eric, KE2EJ, chief engineer of Channel 21 and Channel 13 in New York City, the PBS station. And Howard, you might be talking about Channel 21 or Channel 13, and you might even be talking about some of the others, but UHF is certainly a factor versus VHF. What you're probably going to want to eventually do is to buy a antenna that's got a little bit more gain to it, some kind of a Yagi-like structure. That'll help quite a bit. On top of that, anything you can do to give it more altitude will help. You and I know that the majority of the population is on some kind of cable TV or satellite system, but other methods of reception other than rooftop antennas. In Brooklyn, where Mel lives, he's one of the only guys that's got a rooftop antenna. In Huntington, where I live, as I walk up and down my streets of Fix Hills, I cannot find another operating television aerial on the houses. And because I live in an area where the trees are 85 foot high, and I'm 35 or so airline miles from New York City, I can say with 90% accuracy that without a substantial antenna on the roof, you're not going to get most of the New York City stations in my town with a rooftop antenna. That's with some kind of internal, you know, simple rabbit ears. You'll get Channel 8 from Connecticut, and that's about it, or Channel 21 from Long Island, and that's about it. So these are some of the factors that I can see, as well as what Eric just told us about the he's temporarily not up to full power on his particular Channel 21. And by the way, we call it Channel 21, but I think digital TV-wise, you really transmit on Channel 22, the next 6 megacycles up. Is that approximately?
I'm talking about Empire, not me.
Oh, okay, Empire. Very good. So even Empire is running lower power. You're running full power. Let's find out of the stations, digital television-wise, and how we did get. I'll bet you did get Channel 21, which is essentially in your backyard now. It's KC2OJO, K2LIW in the TechNet.
Dick, I think, first of all, I answered your question wrong because at the time I thought 4 megahertz 2-meter signal rather than a TV signal. And I'll guess it's a homebrew. I saw a small article for quite small. The distance between the active elements are...
KB2MAR with info.
KB2MAR recognized. Howard, once again, you dropped out in the middle of a sentence, and you're starting to tell us about the homebrew antenna you made with 12-inch spacing between the elements, and it's intended for channel 14 reception. First of all, 12-inch spacing between the elements strikes me as a very large number for the upper UHF channels. Was this antenna intended for general UHF coverage, or was it a one single channel antenna? But before we go over to you on that question, Howard, KB2MAR, please start off with your name, sir, and the information that you have. KQRAW, my name is Dick. KB2MAR, you there? Okay, maybe he got called away. Howard, KC2OJO, you've got it.
Okay, Dick. I interrupted because I heard MAR. However, no, it's not 12-inch between elements. The antenna is meant to go between channel last reflector and the first director. So it's definitely mandatory, even with Yagi, although I don't know the gain. It's only as a...
I'm going to pass it over to Eric on this one, see if he's got some input. KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. I wasn't quite listening to him. I was in the middle of doing something, so clarify me again.
Okay, he's using a homebrew Yagi, which is intended for channel 14 through 60. It is 1 foot long, he says, between the reflector and the first director. Didn't tell us how many elements are in it. He had some good reception on channel 21 when he first put it up. The very next day, he's not getting good reception from channel 21. He's not getting good reception from New York City. He is getting occasionally reception from a couple of Smithtown stations. Living in Greenlawn, I think he said he's 60 feet above sea level, and he does have tall trees around. These strike me as all contributing factors. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
And did he say the antenna was indoors?
I think he did. Howard, wait for the beep, wait a second after I stop talking, and tell us, were you using the antenna indoors, or did you elevate it to the chimney of the house? You got it, Howard.
I was definitely using the antenna indoors, and I was getting a very stable signal.
Okay, I think you know the story now, Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, I hope he wasn't talking about the day we went off the air for 6 hours. But, well, there's still a lot of things that can be going on. Not only attenuation, but multipath. Objects in the room. Reflection. That is a small antenna. It is indoors. You're on the other side of Jane Hill, which is kind of like not a good thing. It is picking up, what the heck is it? The station is Midtown. It's the, it's 55. Actually, they put out a pretty good signal out there. Indoors, you know, picking up New York station? I don't think so. Outdoors on a mast, up another 10, 15 feet, very helpful. By the way, you know, digital television really doesn't work. The United States has yet to discover that. But I would suggest that you've probably got some kind of a multipath issue going on. That don't forget, you don't get not poor reception. You get either you get reception or you get no reception.
Yeah, beautiful point there, Eric, and that's one of the things I was going to emphasize. In the days of analog television, as you switch the antenna back and forth in azimuth, raise it up and down, translate it around the room, you can watch an analog picture slowly in a continuous manner, get snowy or get more clear, and so a trained eye watching the screen of a television set with an analog signal gets a beautiful feedback as to when it's getting better. You don't get that with digital. The digital signal, if you're above threshold, you see a picture on the screen and it's snow-free. If you're below threshold, which could be 1 decibel different, all of a sudden you see nothing and you get no information. And you don't know if you're walking in the right direction or pushing the azimuth in the right direction. And let me ask you, Eric, to your knowledge, does any kind of a digital television converter, receiver, or whatever, have the equivalent of an RSSI, receiver signal strength indicator, or if I'm really smart and I dig into the circuitry, is there the equivalent of the automatic gain control voltage somewhere? Is there a way I can put a S-meter on a digital television receiver if I buy just the right brand? K2EJ, K2RIW.
KB2MAR.
MAR recognized, but Eric, first. Go ahead, Eric.
Start thinking digital, Dick. Stop thinking RF. Every device sold has the equivalent of a signal strength meter, but imagine what it's really measuring is error rate. The higher the error rate, the lousier the signal. And it will read error at the point that you won't get pictures, and will continue to read error because the input Chalice decoder has locked up to it, but it's not good enough to descramble the signal. So you do get an indication when you're getting there, but it's a very steep, you know, it's a very steep cliff that you're running into. So you'll acquire the signal, but yet there won't be enough for a solid lock all the way down to decode the MPEG. So you keep going, because what's really happening is the INQ decoder at the front end of the receiver is jittering. If you get to the point where the jitter is small enough, then the rest of the stuff will lock up. And you can swing within that area and, in essence, get a signal strength reading. If you wanted to modify some of these devices, which actually I've done, a couple people have done too, some of the first tuners that were out there, that you do, in fact, get an ADC voltage from the tuner. And you can actually use that to light up a couple LEDs. You know, remember, we're talking digital, so we don't use analog meters. You know, we just have a series of lights that light up. But, in essence, there is actually the equivalent of a signal strength meter in all the converter boxes.
Okay, now, I'm going to try to understand the bit error rate that you're discussing. with the digital television reception. I'm going to pick numbers out of the air just to demonstrate a principle. Let's assume now that my particular television receiver, digital television converter assembly, when seeing a signal of 10 microvolts, gives me an acceptable television picture. I get a continuous picture on the screen at 10 microvolts. And I'm looking at the bit error rate, and I make modifications that I slowly climb from 10 toward 15, toward 20 microvolts, toward 25, toward 30, toward 50, toward 100 microvolts. Although the rate of change of the bit error rate will be slow, is it monotonic? Can I tell when I'm going in the right direction? That's question number one. Question number two, as I go from 10 microvolts where I'm getting good reception, and assume that my particular converter drops out at 9 microvolts, as I slide from 10 down to 9 microvolts, I know that the bit error rate is going to move pretty fast. I don't get a picture below 9 microvolts in my example. As I do something to make the microvolts go from 9 to 8 to 7 to 6 and so on, do I still get some kind of an indication on bit error rate? But because the trellis did not lock up, do I get no information at all? That's question number two. Over to you, Eric, KQRIW.
All right, Dick. Well, as I said before, because the process of a digital receiver is multiple oscillators, multiple phase lock loops, actually, if you want to think of it that way, but the very front-end phase lock loop, actually, usually it's the equalizer. And that equalizer will spit out an error rate. As you go from, say, 9 to 8, that first front end is still locked, but the jitter is increasing, the error rate starts to increase. You go from 8 to 7, okay, it may appear to be twice as much error, depending upon the sensitivity of that loop, the time constant of the loop itself, how sharp the filter is, you know, all the normal PLL stuff, until, just say, you get down to, like, 6 microvolts or 5 microvolts, where the jitter is just so great that it won't actually lock, and then the error rate will be at maximum. You know, that's kind of how it works, you know. It's not exactly logarithmic, it's not exactly linear either. It's, depends upon a lot of different factors. K2RIW, K3GO.
Okay, so to take what you've just given me one more time, and if I've now got a horizontal scale in microvolts and a vertical scale in bit error rate, if this was the nicest of all worlds, that would be a nice linear curve at a 45-degree angle. I have the impression that that curve is going to have at least three regions where the slope is significantly different. A bit error rate vertical versus microvolts horizontal. Is that approximately right? And by the way, below something like 6 microvolts in our example, I think I get very little data that has any meaning. Is that approximately right there, Eric? Go ahead.
I would say that's a good approximation. If you're looking at the bottom of the curve, it would look like a niz, you know. It would look like it just went off the scale at that point. And don't forget that the difference between 10 microvolts, 11 microvolts, 50 microvolts, and 100 microvolts, as far as the picture is concerned, is zero. But as far as the error rate is concerned, is a saturation point. So you'll probably go to like 30 or 40 microvolts. By the way, there's a caveat with this, that there's no reflections involved, that this is a perfect signal that we're talking about, because then other factors come into play. It's really complex, but you know what? It don't work very well.
I know that's a left-handed piece of humor. It doesn't work because the future of digital television in the United States, particularly after February 17th, I think it is, of the 2009, we put all of our eggs in this particular basket. We're all in this particular boat, and we better be floating. Now, yes, in the case of multipass, that's another big factor in bit error rate. I presume the whole digital circuitry has to work very hard with its equalizer to try to live with all of the multipass. Multipass in analog television gives you ghosts, and you can push the antenna back and forth until you get the strongest signal, the least amount of snow, and you can also move it in ways to minimize the ghosts. You're getting that all mishmashed together when it comes to bit error rate. and the display of bit error rate versus antenna orientation and location. Is that approximately correct, Eric? And Eric, you better correct us now. When you say digital television does not work, of course you're giving us left-handed humor. Isn't that true, Eric? K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Let me put it to you this way. It works great in the lab, but it doesn't work so well in the real world. I mean, I had talking to the chief engineer of a company that makes transmitters for the broadcast industry for the last 50 years, and it's like, he watches TV, the plane goes by overhead, bye-bye, there it goes. Multicast. It's getting better. It's getting better, but it's not where it belongs yet, and the improvement's coming in the form of the receiver, not in the transmission method. Let me just point out to you that in analog, if you have a more modern television, you don't see ghosts in it, simply because if you're tuned to a station which has the ghost-canceling burst on it, you can actually have ghost-free reception on your analog TV, no matter which way you turn your antenna until it cuts to the point where it can't figure it out and it won't snap it out. But that's another story for another time. K2RIW, K2EJ.
The ghost-canceling circuit of analog television, this is a brand new one on me, Eric, and maybe many of the other people are listening. How many brands had that? How recent? I mean, if I bought a set in 1990, an analog set, I'm rather sure the ghost-canceling circuit was not there. If I bought a set in 2000, did I get it? If I bought a set in 2007, what percentage of them had a ghost-canceling circuit? And what percentage of ghosts, how much delay, how many dB down, could it cancel? How many brands did this? Brand new subject for us here, Eric. He's giving us quite an eye-opener. You got it, Eric, K2LIW.
I'll tell you what, there was that other station that dropped in there that wanted to say something. Why don't you take him for a second, and we'll continue.
Very good. KB2MAR, wait for 1 second for the beep, which I didn't do. And start off with your name, sir, and then your comment. K2LIW, my name is Dick.
K2RIW, KB2MAR. I just basically want to give a little report on the DTT-900 satellite receiver. It does work very, very well, and it does have the signal strength meter on the television screen itself. On the remote control, there is a signal button that you push. Basically, the signal strength meter is a bar graph, very, very small bar graph on the screen. It goes from poor to excellent in signal strength. And I live in Yonkers right now, and the signal, we're using a channel, the second to the top of the line channel master, the combo VHF-UHF. I mean, of course, everything now is UHF for the digital. And basically, I'm able to receive everything very, very well. It's just on some of the channels, the aspect ratio, you can only switch from 4.3 and 16.9, and only a couple of those channels. But otherwise, it works very, very well.
You sound quite happy with that particular set. Please give us the model number one more time, Gabe, and roughly how many dollars did that cost you? You got it, Gabe.
Okay, this is the add-on digital converter box from Zenith. It's the model DTT-900. I believe the DTT-901 will take over where the 900 left off. It's the same unit. I believe the 901 has the pass-through. In other words, if you still want to watch channels 2 to 13 and 14 to 68 while it's still available, you don't have to run extra cables and back to the TV set. Everything just plugs into one box without buying a splitter and so forth. But I own the DTT-900, which works very, very well. And basically, I qualified under the coupon program, a $40 rebate. Originally sold for $49, and I got the unit for, let's see, I believe it was $19.99.
That's what I recommended, Dick.
Okay, I think you said, Eric, that's the one you recommended. Just to be sure, Gabe, Delta Tango Tango 900. That was the model number that you're using, Gabe. Go ahead.
QSL, Delta Tango Tango 900. The 901 came out. I don't think the 900 is available anymore. By the way, I bought mine at Circuit City. When I bought it about a couple of months ago, they must have had at least 70, 80 models on the shelf of the 900. Now, the 901, I went there recently and I saw they only have the 901 and not the 900. Very little of the 900, but a lot of the 901. It's the same unit, the same exact performance and all that stuff. Just with the pass-through setup. Back to you.
Yeah, the 901 actually has the analog bypass, and when you shut it off, you actually get the analog, because it's low-power stations that are not required to switch to digital. There was a lot of screaming about that.
Now, the 900 or 901 with the pass-through of analog, is that the so-called seventh generation of rake receiver, seventh generation of equalizer built in that you were telling us about earlier? Eric, go ahead.
That's correct, Dick. The 900 didn't have the bypass in it, whereas the 901 did. It's to replace the same receiver, but it has a, you know, bypass path for when you shut the box off, the analog PVC, you know, the RF will pass through the box without being bothered. Whereas in the old one, the when you shut it off, it just went off.
Now, I hope Radio Shack still has a product that I bought from them a few years ago. And this was a double pole, double throw F connector mechanical switch. So you have this little box like object.
Sell them.
Say again?
They still sell them.
Fantastic. So, in other words, for not too many dollars, if I own the 900 and I don't feel like going out and buying the 901, and I'm willing to install this F connector bypass switch that works around that converter box, the DTT900, I now can create my own.
You need two of those switches to do it. Well, you know. Well, yeah, you'd need two of them. Or you'd need a splitter and one of them.
901, 900, same price right now.
Fantastic. But if I already owned a 900 and I want the 901 process, and I did say double pole, double throw, I'll admit that the one that's on the shelf that's easiest to buy is single pole, double throw, and I'd have to buy a pair of those to get the bypass function. But if I really had a double pole, double throw, I could wire that correctly and get a, what do you call it, a bypass function. Back to you, Eric.
Yeah, you could. I ain't never seen one. I don't know. I've never seen a double pole F-connector switch. They might exist. They might exist for satellite, even. It's the reason for it. So, yeah, you know, that is if you really want to pick up your religious low-power station, because that's pretty much what we have around here.
Now, I think that particular switch, the F-connector switch, I'll admit the one I bought was single-pole, double-throw, and if it was reasonably well-constructed, I bet at even at UHF frequencies, it would probably have only a quarter of a dB of insertion loss.
Insertion loss in those days is unbelievable. Try measuring it one day.
Oh, so you're saying that your experience is their insertion loss. What's your guess? 5 dB, Eric, at UHF reach?
No, try about 0.6, 0.7.
Okay, I consider that pretty good. Is the isolation good?
Try about 90 dB.
Wow. Is there anything you don't like about the single pole, single throw, a double throw, Radio Shack, F-connector, mechanically operated switch? Is there anything you don't like about it?
It says Radio Shack. No, you misunderstood me. They work unbelievably well. They work very well. It's surprisingly well, especially how cheaply they're made.
Okay, good crafty marginal engineering. That's what we engineers are supposed to do. There's an infinite number of solutions to every synthesis problem, and a really smart engineer with a ham radio background finds a very crafty way of using the available materials that cost nothing and give you a Cadillac performance at Volkswagen price of the raw material. That's what good ham radio is. Isn't that true, Eric?
Yeah, especially when it's made in China. Actually, you know, you're buying stuff from China. They make some stuff pretty good. They also make some stuff pretty bad.
WB2HWW.
Okay, the Howard number one from Brooklyn. You got it, Howard.
But from Queens. I just need to ask Eric a question. Eric,
Is your IRLP working? Because I'm not hearing this repeater on 9126.
We've had some issues. Yeah, I can fix that.
Okay, because I want to listen to it through that. Sorry to bother you. And good afternoon, good evening, Dick.
Good evening, Hal. Howard number one, KC2OJO. During that period of time, you were not getting channel 21. Is it possible that it was Thursday a week and 2 days ago, a week and 3 days ago? That's when the outage did occur, and maybe that was the time that you were using your indoor antenna and didn't see channel 21. Is it possible that it occurred at that time? KC2OJO, KQLAW.
I think it could have more altitude and probably to be outside rather than inside. And the problem I have with going outside is that I'll need a rotator in quite radically different directions. Connecticut mostly north this town. Probably the Empire State Building mostly west, and I believe.
A very fine, Howard. The good news is that altitude always gives you a benefit. At UHF frequencies, you'd be kind of disappointed to find out how much insertion loss is created by the walls and other things that are in your house, the amount of multipath in your house. So just getting the antenna outside of the house is going to make an improvement. Every couple of feet of extra altitude you give that antenna, you'll be amazed how much the signal will increase. So when you put it on the chimney of your house, for instance, you're going to see a fantastic improvement. Also, when it comes to rotators, don't let that scare you. I'm not sure if it's Radio Shack, but there are a couple of inexpensive rotators with beautiful programming capability for direction that I have seen for not very many dollars. I'm using one at another location on my property. It's not in the shack right here. It's in my little shed alongside of the tower. If you want, I'll find out that brand name. I know it wasn't very many dollars. It's been in use for a good number of years with extremely high performance to dollar ratio. So don't be afraid of a rotator. And you're now going to become a television DXer once you put up a good antenna on top of the chimney with a rotator. And you'll start getting channels that other people, that your neighbors are not getting over the air. And you can start bragging about that. Anyone want to make any further comments on this before we go over to Glenn? Give me your call letters right now. KQRAW in the tech net.
Dick?
Go ahead, Eric.
The Radio Shack rotator is actually made by CalMet. It's a very good rotator. It displays in degrees, so you can use it for ham stuff, too. It's a nice amount of rotator even to use for an ASL mount type antenna.
I am very happy with Radio Shack for the last 10 years. This is N2NNU. Good evening.
N2NNU recognized. Thank you. Eric, roughly how many dollars is the Radio Shack rotator, which is made by Channel Master, that you're speaking of? Roughly how many dollars?
I don't remember exactly, but I think it's somewhere in like the $50 to $60 range. It's a good bang for the buck.
Check any comments. It's brilliant.
66, mine.
So Alex, he paid $66. That's a lot of rotator for the money. Although it's a heavier duty rotator, you go out and buy a Ham M rotator these days, I think it's just around $600. So $66 for this Radio Shack is very nice. Who's the other person who just signed in?
KC2OES.
KC2OES. Please start off with your name, sir, and then your comment. My name is Dick.
Hi, Dick. Good evening to all. This is Fred, KC2OES. Yeah, we discussed, I have those two rotators. I have two of those rotators. I bought them for $59 and online with, I think, like $9 and change shipping.
Good time. We're getting some nice feedback on that particular rotator. And I'm going to be making an improvement on my system. My UHF television aerial is 60 feet up on the side of my tower, and I had a failure of that particular antenna in the rotator, and I'm about to replace it. I'm certainly going to consider this particular Radio Shack one. although I may be pushing my luck a little bit because the particular fringe area, television aerial that I bought, 6 months or so ago, one of the last ones were at Radio Shack. They had to go into the back room and said, boy, we never thought we'd sell that thing. A fringe area, great big long antenna with a ton of dust on it. I can tell it was in their stock room for a long period of time. I may have to do a little bit of modification to make sure that it is wind balanced so I don't push this Radio Shack rotator. But,
got good bearings.
Say that again, it's got good bearings, but still, when you make an antenna wind balanced and you won't have trouble rotating clockwise versus counterclockwise on a windy day, you'd be amazed how many people can't rotate their antenna on a windy day. Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm aware. It's a cast bearing assembly. It's cheap, but it's good. You know, take it apart in 4 or 5 years, dust some more grease in it, and you'll be fine.
Okay. And many a rotator, an amateur, has thought that the grease was freezing up and it didn't work very well in the wintertime, and they assumed that something was wrong in the bell housing of the rotator itself. I don't know about the modern rotators, but the Cornell Duvalier type rotators, the Ham-M and the AR-22s, it was the capacitor, the 120 microfarad electrolytic AC capacitor that was drying out, and when it went from 120 microfarads down to 10, your turning torque on that rotator went from a whole lot of foot-pounds down to something which became nearly zero. And so a lot of people didn't know about that capacitor failure. And you use a real motor starch capacitor as a substitute. I'm trying to look for the one that I used to have sitting right here. There, here's one right now, made by Mallory. You put a high-quality Mallory motor starch capacitor in there as opposed to this paper thing that was in there by Cornell Duvalier. And by the way, sometimes I would buy them right brand new off the shelf, so to speak, from Harrison Radio, and the brand new one was already dried out even before it got to my shack. So quite a eye-opening experience I had on that in the old days. Glenn, what's the latest in your neighborhood? KC2 QIQ, K2RIW on the deck, man.
One of
them. Sounds awfully good. Give us a couple more words. What model number? What brand name? I think you said you bought it from eBay. And how many dollars? So how would I recognize it? What do I go look for? Glenn, go ahead.
Sure. If you go out to eBay and find these antennas work, pick up FM reception. They'll also go right up to UHF frequencies and VHF as well. And it's amazing how small these things are. I would be really sensible enough to work with about $9. Somewhere in between there.
Comment.
Okay, now by a second comment. You said the cheapest one I bought was $50 and the most expensive one I bought was $90. Does that mean you bought at least two, if not more, Glenn? Go ahead.
Yeah, I've sold already sort of like about five. One of my cousins has, two of my friends of mine, and, you know, I have one here actually for FM radio. It's quite fantastic.
That sounds like a lot of fun. A person who said comment, thought if we could call letters if you're not somebody who's already signed in. And your name, sir. My name is Dick.
Hi, this is Fred, KC2OES. Yeah, they're available for bidding between $20 and $42. $42 in the change, you can buy one outright. It's a self-contained rotor and antenna.
Sounds awfully good, Fred. Thank you. Okay, I think we're ready for Glenn. Go ahead with your real question, Glenn. Thank you for the comment.
Good evening, Dick. I just want to say good evening. My question tonight is kind of a dumb one, but hopefully this is for the CW operators out there. I was getting a little confused copying of, you know, different QSOs on the air, and I pressed in CW position, but when I went back into CW position, where I get my nice sideband filters, my nice, you know, 500 hertz filter, the station disappeared, and I tried moving the VFO back and forth to see if I could.
Yeah, this is a common problem. The guys who use a HF receiver as a tunable IF on their VHF, UHF, SHF converter. You take, for instance, a guy on 10 gigahertz, and he's flipping back and forth between the sideband mode and the CW mode. Each individual manufacturer has their own favorite way of doing this, and I wish there was a standard. if this is the best of all worlds, when you dial the receiver into, I'm going to pick a number, 7.1000 megacycles, that would be the carrier frequency. And if you set it in the upper sideband mode, all of your audio of the sideband transmission would be on the high side of that.